How long has it been since you really rested? Hello, I'm Paul Dibdahl, and welcome to The Good Word. Our topic this week is rest, and my conversation partners are Dr. Dave Thomas and Dr. Carl Cosart. They're both colleagues of mine in the School of Theology at Walla Walla University. I'd like to welcome them both.
We're going to be resting, yes. Paul.
Yes.
Thank you, Paul.
Good. We live in a very hectic and fast-paced world. There are a bunch of things that we cannot admit to others. You know, we'd be ashamed to admit them to others. But one that we willingly confess, in fact, it's almost a badge of honor, is that we're busy. People can ask how we're, exhausted. It's all right to admit to that. Recent studies have noted that those who regularly take time out from their busy schedules for rest, it actually is connected with longevity. Is this just a new concept that we've picked up, science research has finally discovered? Do we find roots somewhere even further back that rest might be important to us? Too easy of a question, I think.
No, it's a loaded question, Paul, but it's a good one because it gives the occasion to point out that in the creation story itself, in the very beginning of the Bible, that when God was finished the creative activity, he took a whole day and rested. And the story is very clear that God rested on the seventh day, and he hallowed it, or he made it holy. He sanctified it. He set it aside as a memorial in time that human beings were to observe. First of all, creating a rest for themselves, and if you look in Exodus 20, you have this commandment. It is quite complex. It involves you and the people who work for you and your animals.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
The one provision is your wife is never mentioned which is a bit problematic, and we could talk about that one, I think, Paul. But, this whole idea of a built-in rest on a weekly basis comes right from the story of creation.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, at different times in Earth's history, it's lost sight of.
Yeah. Three things there, right at the beginning of the Bible. As you mentioned, Sabbath is set aside or sanctified. God rests, and the day is blessed as well. Oh, the seventh day is blessed.
Yeah.
Why is it that God would have to rest?
You know,
is God tired? This is
a fascinating question, because the seventh day is not Adam and Eve's seventh day. It's their first day.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually begin with rest. Where God works, they began by entering into his rest. He was the one who had finished this world, and this rest was a time for communion, for fellowship, to enjoy what he did. And they begin by accepting his rest, entering into his rest, which to me is a powerful statement that this wasn't simply for Adam and Eve a day to crash physically. Sure, that's involved, but it for them was a spiritual time of connection, of orientation, which tells me it's something more profound than often we turn it into today.
Now, I'm also intrigued by that comment, Carl, because if you count days the way the Bible counts them, meaning from evening to evening, we count from midnight to midnight, but the Bible counts from evening to evening, that your day begins by entering, even just living from day to day. The first portion of your day is the winding down and the resting so you can be awakened to do the business of the day. So that dynamic that you talk about in the weekly rest is part of the daily rest.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So when God came down to commune with the church, with Adam and Eve, he's actually coming at the beginning of their day to say, well, okay, I know you're going to rest now and have a good nap and a sleep, and then just sort a few things out here, we'll dialogue, and then on you go. So.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Now, the Bible mentions in that creation account that is the seventh day.
Mm. Yeah.
We could skip ahead to the book of Exodus, read the Ten Commandments, where, again, the seventh day is mentioned. Sabbath is the seventh day. Now, that's certainly important to me, important to you as well. At various times, though, in the history of my church, the Seventh-day Adventist denomination, Seventh-day Adventists have been encouraged to be Sabbath keepers and not Saturday keepers. Does that make sense? What might be the what's going on with that warning?
I think you're playing with the idea of, and I use playing in a good sense. Okay. You're playing off the letter of the law and the spirit of the law again. Is that there are some people who observe that injunction of the Bible about the seventh day, and they turn into hard cases, beating up on other individuals, and by doing so completely miss the fact that there is a spirit associated with this resting that is very, very significant. Mm-hmm. And if you neglect to enter the spirit of that day, then merely keeping the seventh day by negation, not doing things, is not really
causing. And we would have a good example of that in the passion story of Jesus Christ, because he's taken off the cross, he's brought down because they're concerned about the Sabbath. That to me says that they missed the point.
Yeah.
We do too as well, so it's not just judgmental them, but we often miss the point ourselves as well.
True Sabbath keeping has to be about something more than just getting a certain day right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I mentioned Exodus 20 a moment ago, where we find the Ten Commandments. But the Ten Commandments also appear again in Deuteronomy chapter 5. And it's interesting to compare the Sabbath commandment in those two places. There are a few differences in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. Any that you'd like to note as significant?
I mean, there's two basic ones. In Exodus chapter 20, the Sabbath experience is tied to a memorial of God's creation, his act in the beginning of making this world, whereas the passage in Deuteronomy 5 is tied specifically to his liberating the children of Israel from Egypt. So you have these two different pictures. The Sabbath has a sign of creation, a memorial of creation, and the Sabbath as a sign of redemption.
Mm-hmm.
So two different pictures, but both of them coming together with the Sabbath.
Okay. Well, could there be other legitimate reasons why one would keep Sabbath? Is it just to remember those two realities?
Well, Paul talks about not neglecting the assembling of yourselves together.
Mm-hmm. Hebrews.
I guess shouldn't say Paul. The not neglecting the assembling of yourselves together, that's a very important function, I think, for Sabbath, is to be involved with fellow believers in some kind of worship or constructive activity.
And for me, I guess I would answer the question, and maybe this is a trick question, we'll get caught here, but I would say, that's it for me. It's redemption and creation, and what they just mentioned are aspects of both. I'm a created being, created for fellowship with others, and so I experience that on the Sabbath. I also experience his redemption on the Sabbath. Remember that you know, I was stuck in the pit of sin, and he pulled me out of that pit. Mm-hmm. He liberated me from my own bondage to Egypt, to this world. So for me, those two become the two pillars, which defines what the Sabbath is about.
But I also like in the Old Testament prophets when they talk about the Sabbath of the future. You know, there's a passage about from Sabbath to Sabbath and new moon and new moon to new moon we will gather. So I see Sabbath not only looking back but looking forward.
Mm-hmm.
to restoration. You know, the world is now broken, and the context in which the Sabbath was first given is now much changed. But Sabbath can also help you look forward, much like the Lord's Supper can, where Jesus said, I won't eat this food and drink this until I meet with you in the kingdom. I see Sabbath pointing forward too, although it's not as dramatic as
well. It's interesting because the Sabbath is just this. I mean, it's wonderful. Maybe an analogy is just too low key of a word, but to define what God offers to us. I think of the book of Hebrews again, chapter 4, where it says, talking about salvation and connecting it to rest and to the Sabbath. It says, there remains, therefore, literally the text says, a keeping of the Sabbath for the people of God. It becomes an analogy of salvation again. Jesus himself said, you know, come to me, all you who labor and everything, and I will give you rest.
Yeah, rest.
And I, at least for me, my own personal experience, when I first came back into the church, all I saw the Sabbath as being at first was simply a day for physical inactivity, to crash, to take a nap, just to get away from the world. But it is so much more profound than just a day.
But even as just physical rest, it's a great
idea. Oh, it's a great, yeah, no, I enjoy that too. But there's more to it than just a day off, because any day can work just as a day off, just crash on Sunday.
Yeah.
But there's something special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What about Jesus, the example of Jesus? Was Jesus a Sabbath keeper or a Sabbath breaker?
Once again, that's a tricky question, because
that one is a little tricky. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, he's crucified. Ultimately, the Gospels tell us he's crucified. At least John mentions this, because they were upset about his breaking the Sabbath. In their opinion, he was violating the Sabbath by his acts of healing, his acts of redemption, pulling some grain and rubbing them between his hands. They saw him as a lawbreaker. I would say he wasn't a lawbreaker. He was trying to redefine what the Sabbath was about. They had lost the essence. And so Jesus comes to reestablish the meaning of the Sabbath, so much so that he himself even observes the Sabbath after he's crucified, because he rests in the tomb before he comes out on Sunday morning.
So more, instead of saying a Sabbath breaker, he's trying to restore the Sabbath to its original intended meaning and purpose.
Oh, very much so.
Yeah. A Sabbath is a day for healing. I know in class we talk about Jesus' Sabbath miracles and the differences between the miracles that Jesus performs on Sabbath compared with those performed on other days. And it's one of the things Jesus does is it's a public miracle. It's a healing miracle that could wait for another day. It's a person who wouldn't need that immediate medical attention, but he chooses to heal. And then usually he uses that healing as an occasion to teach or to say something about the Sabbath.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus, speaking of the Sabbath, said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Is that just a riddle, or what is that?
I mean, it appears like it is. I mean, what is he saying there? And I think he's just trying to put it in perspective for the Jews. It seemed like man was almost made for the Sabbath, that the Sabbath is kind of the ruling entity that dictates everything. And they were so conscious about what they would do here and there. But they put the cart before the horse, I guess you would say. Sabbath was made for man, a blessing, a spiritual blessing, to make our quality of life here much better than without it.
Okay.
And I think that's what Jesus was pointing us to.
Okay. In terms of Sabbath keeping, any family traditions that you have that help to make Sabbath special for you that you'd be willing to share?
In our family, we start off every Friday night by repeating we play a little game. We quiz each other on the Ten Commandments. We'll say number one to you, and they have to repeat it. And, so we do the commandments in various orders. And then we culminate with the fourth commandment, where we say it out loud to kind of define, to make the beginning to mark the entry door of the Sabbath. That's one thing we do.
Yeah, in my house, there's almost always a Friday night meal that comes, and it's a time, because our family's all gone all over the place now, but it's a time of gathering and focusing and enjoying each other's company and rest.
Family time is one of the great blessings, I think, of Sabbath. Wonderful memories that I have growing up, and memories that I've been able to create now with my own family. I'm very thankful for the Sabbath,
Amen.
The gift that God gave. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Dave and Carl, for your willingness to share. Thanks also to Josiah Hackerott, our program engineer. And thank you for listening in. For The Good Word, I'm Paul Dibdahl.
You've been listening to Good Word, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla University and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you can call 509-527-2194. Thanks for listening, and we'll be here next week at this time with Good Word.